But our software starts with running them through the process of reviewing the companies that they're already looking at. And we need them to understand, yes, so it's a combination of everything. It's a combination of what is their personal interests, what are their professional skills, what is the return on investment that they want from a company. What do they want personally? Like, what do they want their lifestyle to look like? Because, you know, if you only want to be working 30 hours a week and you're looking at a business that, you know, the owner's in there 50, 60 hours a week, you know, that's not going to be a good fit for you.
Welcome to the Three Steps to Thrive podcast, where each show will show you three simple, practical, and actionable steps to improve your life or your business. Now, here's your host, James Lamb. And guess what? That's me. Good morning, good evening, good afternoon, team, wherever you are. My name is James with Three Steps to Thrive. Today, I'm super excited to have somebody I've never met before, but she seems really nice and her LinkedIn bio looked good. Her name is Elizabeth McRae. Say hello, Elizabeth.
Hi.
So Elizabeth is like a true Canadian. Did you grow up in PEI?
I did.
And for team, PEI is a term for Charlottetown, Prince Edward Island. Known for two things. There is Anne of Green Gables, I believe, is filmed on PEI, and that is a super Canadiana film. So if you know that, you're definitely Canadian. And potatoes. Those are like the two big things from PEI. And Elizabeth, obviously, the three big things now. So Elizabeth began her entrepreneur journey in her early 20s as a freelance artist doing commissions for private clients and restaurants in Charlottetown, PEI, which is amazing. And I'm sure some of your art actually still hangs there, yes?
Well, some of the restaurants that I was working in are no longer there, unfortunately, but I'm sure there's a few elements that are still around if I went looking. Yeah.
Yeah. That's amazing stuff. And you know, team, it's always really interesting. We always encourage people, and I don't know if you still do art on the side, Elizabeth, and I'm kind of hoping you do, because it's important sometimes, right? It's important to kind of find your own outlet, so to speak. Anyways, let me finish this. So, or else I'm going to start podcasting right away and interviewing right away, and we won't even finish this. So, daughter of a self-employed produce exporter, she was raised in the environment of a home-based business with an international reach when landlines and fax machines were cutting edge. And Elizabeth, you and I both remember that. And then the internet came with, there was 28.8 and then 56.6. And then, you know, the world was amazing, right? And with dial-up internet. She moved to Alberta in 2007, spending several years in marketing and working in the not-for-profit sector. So you and I both share that experience, actually. Mm-hmm. But she was never quite settled. In 2012, she and her husband set out to buy a business and landed on a mobile tire franchise in Atlantic Canada. Through the experience of building that business to sell, she was introduced and trained by the late Pam Ryan to broker businesses, where she was exposed to the ever-growing need for more education and support prior to the sale of one's business. And listeners, it's June 26th on the recording. I sold my business 56 days ago, and I could not imagine the amount of stuff that you had to have in place before you sold a business. So take note of this interview if that's your exit strategy. Today, Elizabeth is a certified exit planner and speaks to groups of entrepreneurs and advisors on the process of a sale, the spectrum of exit options, how to build an exit team, and encouraging early preparation. Elizabeth is the president of Commercial Ventures, a boutique consulting and advisory firm specializing in exit planning and transaction services for Main Street and lower middle market companies. So welcome to the show, Elizabeth.
Thank you for having me on, James.
It's great to have you. And it's neat. This is kind of the world we live in, right? And I'll explain to people the process of me choosing to have you on the show, because most of the people that I interview, I actually know already, right? Or they've been referred to me. I was going on LinkedIn to update my woefully inadequate and under detailed LinkedIn profile, which it still is, by the way. And I saw Elizabeth's head pop up and they said, people you may want to know, or people you may know. I think it's actually the title. And I was like, oh, you look interesting. I'll click on you. And then here I am being like, actually, you're kind of interesting. So I decided to reach out And I said, firstly, I'm not one of these salespeople. Secondly, you seem interested, right? So we should connect. But tell me a little bit about, because you've been in businesses all over Canada. Yes?
Yeah, Charlottetown, Halifax, and Calgary.
Yes. So it's virtually right across Canada. Let's be honest. It's like the two end and you skip the middle, right?
Yeah.
But tell me about your favorite business. What was your favorite business that you've run? And it can be the one you own right now. But tell me about the favorite one you've done and the reason why you enjoyed it.
Well, that's a difficult question because for me, I think it's what's coming next. So for me, I feel the last 8 years has really been laying the groundwork for what is coming next. And it's been a real evolution for me. I was told by an M&A advisor, mergers and acquisition advisor one time that this industry, this sector chooses you. And the way that I fell into it was very organically. I was a business owner and then sought to get out of my own business. And then it ended up selling businesses. And then from that experience, I found a gap and a need and then evolved into what I'm doing now. Which is mostly working with businesses in the years leading up to a sale. And for me, I think, yeah, I'm just on the cusp of really sort of getting into my favorite business right now. We are continuing to evolve. But I have another project on the go. We're starting a social tech company. And I think that the last 8 years have really laid the groundwork for what's coming next. And I'm so excited about what is coming next.
Tell me about that. What is the social tech company that you talk about? Are you allowed to speak about it, or do you have to speak in classified terms?
I can share a little bit, sure. So there's been a lot of studies over the last 5 years, and there is a bubble that people say that are coming. BDC and PwC and a lot of these big companies have done studies showing that the baby boomers that own businesses, that there's a bubble coming. And I've heard it described as a mass exodus of businesses.
Yes.
That are going to be changing hands in the next 10 years. And it's so interesting now with COVID, because COVID just sped all of that up. Mm-hmm. And so on one hand, that's why I do exit planning, is because I do believe that there are more things that can be done for businesses before they plan to sell, sure. Which hopefully will impact the statistics. It's said that 70 to 80% of businesses that go to market don't sell. Mm-hmm. And what happens to those businesses when they close or their employees? And I mean, you do the math on the number of small businesses in this country, like that's an astronomical number of people that are at risk of not having somewhere to come to work. Totally unrelated to COVID in general. So that's one of the reasons that motivated me to do what I do. But then when I was working as a broker, I had more and more people coming to me saying, I want to buy a business. And mm-hmm. at the time we weren't set up to help them. Mm-hmm. And, a lot of people who have 10, 15 years of experience, or they're 10 to 15 years away from retirement, they would love to be entrepreneurs, but they're not about to take the risk and start a business, mm-hmm. and go through that, trudging through the first few years of a startup. And yes. So they're kind of familiar with the idea of buying a business. And so that's where our startup is involved with supporting people to buy businesses. Mm-hmm. And it's so interesting because people who are mid-career really have a handle on, management and the ability to scale some of these businesses. So even like the business that you had sold, you sold it to someone who was very, very experienced in mm-hmm. growing and scaling companies. Yes. And he's going to take your company and do wonderful things with it. Mm-hmm. So we work with individuals who are seeking to buy their first business, and they're wonderful, experienced, motivated people. They want to buy cash flow positive businesses that have mm-hmm. a good track record. And now we're providing a solution for business owners who are looking to exit. So that's where our social impact comes, is like we can now bring more capable buyers who we've worked with very closely and who are very prepared to look at some of these companies that are coming to market. And we've vetted them. So there's a greater trust factor.
Right. That's actually pretty cool. It's pretty exciting, right?
Yes.
I have a couple questions to ask you off what you just said.
Mm-hmm.
So I will prep you, and I'm going to ask them at the same time. Then I will tell you which one we should answer first. So, one of the questions I have is, when you work with someone who buys a business, how do you determine what's right for them? Is it their interests? Is it their level of management? And I'm sure that cash availability is factored in there somewhere, right? Or ability to get a loan. And because I find the next question really interesting. So I'm going to prep you for it because it's going to be a little bit of a weird one. And that is, you said there's going to be a mass exodus of small business. If there's a credit crunch, what's going to happen to the small businesses if there aren't enough buyers? Is it like a home market where the bubble collapses and you just end up selling for what you can, right? Anyways, let's answer the first one. So okay. The first one is the easier one, I think. How do you match up? It's like dating, isn't it, right? How do you match up these potential new buyers with potential businesses? What do you ask them? What's important to know?
Yeah, so we don't do the matching ourselves. We help them understand the process, and we will help them understand, like, how do you, sort of like you had asked, like, how do you understand what business is right for you? So our software doesn't pair them yet. There is other softwares that can do that. But our software starts with running them through the process of reviewing the companies that they're already looking at. And we need them to understand, yes, so it's a combination of everything. It's a combination of what is their personal interests, what are their professional skills, what is the return on investment that they want from a company. What do they want personally? Like, what do they want their lifestyle to look like? Because, you know, if you only want to be working 30 hours a week and you're looking at a business that, you know, the owner's in there 50, 60 hours a week, you know, that's not going to be a good fit for you.
Yeah.
And some people want passive ownership. They don't want to be involved on the day to day. And some people say, you know, I'm ready to bootstrap. I'm ready to get in there and do what needs to be done.
Yeah.
I talked to a professional in oil and gas yesterday, and they have a partner and they're looking to get into one retail space and then learn it, rebrand it, and then they'll buy multiple other locations and then we'll do a roll-up strategy. And so we're seeing a lot more strategic plays in the market. So we kind of walk them through what that looks like and how do you even speak to the business owner on the other side in a way that, you know, you're going to start to build that trust with them so that they're going to accept an offer that you push across the table.
Yeah. Let me ask you, it makes sense. Let me ask you one more question, not related to software. So this is your based on your experience, right? And I'll give you a little bit of backstory. So when we sold the company to the person who actually finally wanted to buy it, we had a lot of tire kickers. I don't know if you get a lot of tire kickers in your industry. Oh my goodness. I don't know how you have the patience for them, Elizabeth, because it's a pain, right?
Yeah.
And you know, we have a lot of people who kind of come in all big headed thinking like, I'm going to turn this around or not turn it around because there was nothing to turn around, but I'm going to make this huge and, thinking they're really smart, right? We have an emphasis in this culture on smartness and brightness. But that to me is like a recipe for disaster. Can you comment on that a little bit? Like you know, you said yourself that some people look at, you know, just buying a company and having it run passively in the back versus, you know, is that actually ever going to work? Or what's your experience there when people come in and be like, I'm so smart, I can do this myself and I will have no problems?
Yeah. So we definitely, you know, we'll have that conversation. We'll tone down a little bit of the behavior, but it's really interesting when you say that there's so many tire kickers and there very much are. So when I was in the business broker space, yeah, like 90% of the people that contacted us were tire kickers. And even, I know in the States, the statistic that they throw out, the business broker industry in the States, they'll say that, you know, 95%, there's only 5% of buyers that are actually serious anyway. And so 5% is very small. And our buyers that we work with are very motivated. I would say the majority of them are very humble about their skills. They really want to work with the exiting owner. They want to learn from them. And we always say, you know, don't rush in and change things. You know, you need to buy it, learn it. It's going to be a steep learning curve. There's always going to be more time investment than you anticipated. You know, if the exiting owner says they worked 20 hours a week, right off the bat, you might be 20 hours a week down the road, but you're not going to be 20 hours a week right now. So be prepared for that learning curve. And a lot of them are very aware of it. Like the individual I spoke with yesterday, she said, you know, we don't want to be in the business all the time. We want to build a company that can support our living wage. But she said, I know we're going to be in there for the first 2 years. Yeah. So a lot of our buyers are very self-aware. And they come to us from referrals. So we know that they come from a trusted source. And then we're trying to take that 5% of serious buyers and turn that into 80%. So mm-hmm. our buyers are that much more motivated and prepared and ready to go. And also because they're putting in time with us to build out their search criteria for what they're actually looking for. And these people, like our buyers, are investing 5, 10, 15 hours a week in their search for a company. Like they're very serious.
Right. No, that makes a lot of sense. It's good to hear because you're right. There are a lot of tire kickers and, you know, it's almost like akin to someone who first gets the idea of buying a house. And what's the very first thing they do? They don't go to the mortgage broker and say, hey, how much can I afford? They go on and they look for the perfect house that's out there. Right. And but without any knowledge about if it's a good house, you know, they don't bring in a realtor. They don't bring in a mortgage broker. They don't bring any lawyers in. There's nothing that they just go on. And they're like, you know, it's like the dream is out there, so to speak. Right. So tell me about, I prepped you for this question, right? Yeah. And is there a business bubble, so to speak? Let me rephrase the question. So, you know, you were saying that, and I could see this too, and we all see it. Baby boomers are selling their businesses, right? They're a virtual cash machine, so to speak, something they've been working on for 40 or 50 years, some of them. That's a long time. Mm-hmm. And they're selling it at different levels of maturity and different levels of success. Now, the X and Y generation, in terms of numbers anyways, they're much smaller than the baby boomers, right? And the next sizable generation gap is actually the millennials right after that. So should we start looking at freeing up capital so that other people can buy the businesses? And if we don't do that, do you think there's going to be do you think we're in a bubble? So there's too much supply of profitable businesses for sale?
Yeah, it's a really good question. From the reports that I've seen, you know, even before COVID in the last year or two, you know, the reports are still showing that it is a seller's market. I think we will see that flip, especially post-COVID. I think, you know, there are a lot of businesses that will say, you know, I don't have the capacity to rebuild my company again after COVID. Mm-hmm. And so and a lot of those people, you know, because of their age are going to say, I'm ready to exit now, regardless of the value that it can capture. And then you'll have the people that say, no, I'm going to rebuild and I want to get the value out of my company that I want. And they'll spend a few more years in their business. So mm-hmm. that's where I think exit planning will really come into play now more than ever, you know, to be prepared to meet the market demand because buyers are getting more sophisticated.
Yes.
So I think what we'll see is, yes, I think there will be more of a surplus in probably the next 12 to 18 months mm-hmm. and then following into the next few years. I think it will flip into a buyer's market. And I think you're sort of at the mercy of the banks, you know, what the interest rates and the banks do post COVID, I think is still so, it's so unprecedented. We really don't know yet what is going to happen there. I think they'll do what they can post COVID for the recovery mm-hmm. efforts. But then after that, you know, who's going to be responsible for paying for all this cash that's going out. So, interest rates, for acquisitions, we don't know what that's going to look like. So it's, in my opinion, I think we're going to see more creative structuring, which means, you know, maybe the banks will be coming in with less, less lending power, and will more of the responsibility of the lending will fall on the business owner. So I don't know if you're familiar with the concept of vendor financing. But I think that's where the business owner actually carries a part of the loan. So the purchaser pays the business owner directly over a structured period of time, maybe with an interest rate that they pay directly to the business owner. And so as a seller, as a business owner, you might get so much cash on close, and then the rest you get over a period of time. And I think, you know, in previous to now, you know, you might have been walking away with 70 to 80 to 90% of cash on close. And now I think that percentage is going to go down. Like, we have a deal on the table right now where pre-COVID they were getting like 80% cash on close, and the deal is still going through, but they're only getting 40% on close now.
It actually might work out for more people that way though, right? Like, if the baby boomers are retiring and they, instead of plowing that money into real estate or plowing that money into like kind of an RSP that splits a dividend, like maybe this is a better way to do it for a lot of people, right? Provided, and it's a big caveat, and you know this as well as I do, provided the business survives, right? That's sort of the biggest caveat. And I don't know if you see this time and time again. I don't know how much you stay in contact or track companies that you've bought or sold on behalf of owners. But I'm sure some of them were in the wrong hand, so to speak, right? So a new owner comes in, and then some of them just totally just go belly up for whatever reason, which is really sad, but some of them end up doing really well. So you mentioned you had a line in what you just said, and that line was, the owners don't have the capacity to build again. Is that time capacity? Is that energy capacity? Or is that money capacity?
I think it'll be a combination of all three. So if you think about what happened in the last, even in the last 10 years, and especially, I mean, I know your listeners are everywhere, but you know, 2008, 2009, we saw the recession there, the financial recession. In Alberta, Calgary saw flooding in 2013. Then we saw the oil decline 2014, you know, 2015, over the last 5 years. And now this. And so if you're a business owner who's 55, 60, 65, and every five to 10 years, you're pounded by another economic crunch, then yeah, you know, you're, things are changing, personally as well. So you have to look at when it comes to selling the business, you're looking at three factors. You're looking at the personal readiness of the individual owner. You're looking at the company readiness, and you're looking at the market. So when those three things align, you've got the recipe for a sale. If those things are not aligned, then it's most likely that the business is going to capture a lower price on market, or that the exiting owner is going to have to carry a seller's note, which is a vendor financing piece, more so if they want out. And that comes down to the personal motivation. You know, if they're ready to get out personally, but the company's not ready, or the market is not where it could be for a higher asking price, then, you know, the formula is just, the recipe's not going to be, you're not going to be baking the best cake.
No, that's very fair. And that's where exit planning comes into play, right? Is that you plan with these people over months or years to get the right things ready. Is that correct?
Yes.
Okay. One more question, then we're going to get to your three tips. COVID, we're recording in the middle of, well, hopefully it's the tail end of COVID now. I can actually say that. It's the end of June, right? So we've been on quote unquote lockdown for 3 months. Opportunity or liability?
Can you rephrase that again? Opportunity or liability in which context?
For you, for buyers, for sellers, for business in general. I know that it's a very wide sweeping statement, but I'm going to give that ball to you without too much sandboxing around it and let you run with it.
Ooh, that's a heavy question. I think a lot of business owners, a lot of, well, everyone, we've all had the time and the space, a lot of us, to do some soul searching and realize what's really important to us during this time. You know, we've all had more time with our immediate families, or maybe less time if you were at a distance from them, to really see what really matters in a lot of our lives. And so I think a lot of business owners, you know, are facing this hard decision, you know, do I push through and make this work? Or if they were struggling before COVID, that this is an out. I spoke with another consultant the other day, and, you know, now is almost like, you know, you have permission to not continue now. And, you know, business owners, we're so proud and we're so passionate, and we really do want to see our businesses succeed. And, you know, sometimes at the detriment of, you know, your personal pocketbook. And, you know, now is the time to say, you know, if it's not working out, and it wasn't working out before COVID, you know, here's your out to say to the world, you know, COVID took out my business. It's nothing that, you know, it wasn't a business failure on their part. And sometimes it's an easier pill to swallow to say that, you know, there was a force of nature that took out my business. Mm-hmm. Like, I did not do this. And, you know, regardless of where you perceive that event taking place, or whether you had an impact in it, you know, now, basically what I'm saying is, a lot of businesses, you know, if they don't have the energy, the capacity to keep going mentally, emotionally, financially, a lot of them will close. But it's like anything, you know, you look at the forest bed, you know, there is regrowth that comes through that. I think the startup environment will be very, very exciting after this. I think the technology, the advancements and innovation that will come out of this will be brilliant. You know, we'll see a lot of expansion and growth in a lot of industries. There are, we've been starting to hear rumblings of companies that say, I've done really well through COVID, and I am going to be on the acquisition path. So I think, you know, we'll see a change in the market. I think for us, liability or opportunity, I think it'll be an opportunity for us. We're positioning ourselves in a way that we can, you know, how can we just get more awareness out to business owners about all of their options? You know, we don't just work with business owners who are looking to sell to a third party. We want them to be aware of all of their exit options. You know, if that's, you know, selling a minority or majority recap to private equity, if it's, you know, showing them that, yeah, you can actually sell to your employees. And sometimes that's the best option for business owners. And we hear a lot of the time that they say, you know, I think my employees would be great, but they don't have the money. And there is, you know, there's lots of solutions for that. We had a small massage therapy company sell a few years ago to one of the therapists that was in the company, and she was in her early 20s, and they've vendor financed 50% and BDC the other 50%. Like, I think she bought this small business for like a couple thousand dollars. Like, that was amazing to participate in, you know, somebody that early in their career that could buy this business and then have it paid off in a few years. And now, you know, she's in her early 20s and she's got this asset that if she resells it in a few years, she's going to be, you know, she's going to have that much more cash in her pocket at the end of the day. So, you know, that was fantastic to see. And I think there's a lot more younger people, generation, you know, the millennials that are catching mm-hmm. on to this entrepreneurial buzz. And, you know, we want to expose through our new program, we want to expose, you know, entrepreneurship through acquisition to as many people as possible, because we want to drive the demand for these businesses they're exiting. You know, we want to create more buyers that didn't know this was an option. And a lot of our buyers are fully employed. And we've got executives, we've got lawyers, we've got CEOs mm-hmm. that are working in companies right now that say, I want to buy something. I want to own something that's mine.
Yeah.
And that's, so with our new platform, our profiles that people create are anonymous.
Yes.
And so they can confidentially look for a business and be found anonymously.
That is a super comprehensive and amazing answer, by the way. That was well thought out. So good on you. You know, it's interesting because you remember earlier in the conversation I spoke about his name is Jay, and you can see it on the Be Social YYC website. He's the you know ex-president of Shaw Communications, and he bought our little boutique. We call it boutique because it's small, to be honest, but it's our little marketing firm, right? And I speak to Jay about once a month still. And it's not for training purposes, although he asks me questions sometimes, but it's more just a catch up because I'm just curious as how it's going. And he says he's having more fun than he has in years. You know, so you assume, you know, you picture the president of Shaw Communications and you expect this, like, he has four people working for him. He has a person dedicated towards getting coffee, someone, you know, like just ridiculous things. But he's like, no, I love what I do. And I think some of that is probably going to catch on. All right. Okay. We are running out of time here. So really quickly, your three actionable, simple, and practical steps. What can improve the business owner or the business?
So I'm gonna go on the personal side of this question. I think, you know, the most common things are, you know, make sure your financials are clean and make sure the business isn't rent, you know, overly dependent on you. Make sure your intangible assets are transferable and that value needs to be transferred to the next owner. And, you know, there's value drivers and there's your financials and that kind of thing. But when I was selling businesses, I found that I wasn't doing enough on the personal side first. And I think first and foremost, it's so important for the business owner to have an after plan. Mm-hmm. What are you actually going to focus on after you sell the business? So there's a studies that are done in the States called the State of Owner Readiness. And studies show that 75% of business owners who sell 1 year after they sell are not happy. And we hear a lot where, you know, I ask someone, you know, what are you going to do after the business sells? And they go, I don't know. I haven't even thought about that yet. I'm so consumed with my business right now. I cannot think about what I'm going to do afterwards. Mm-hmm. And it really is so important to know what you are going to afterwards. So I would say, you know, really, you know, do that mind mapping, do that planning, you know, be excited about what you will do after your business. It really is important. Mm-hmm. And it'll help you move through the exit process because you know what you're going to next. And it'll get you really excited. The next thing I would say is, you know, if someone's nearing retirement and they need a certain amount from their business, or they have they're making a career change, or they're going on to another project where they need so much investment capital from the sale of your business, you got to know where you are personally. Like before you even have the conversation about selling your business, you got to know on a personal financial level, what do you have and how is that building? So if I'm nearing retirement and I need proceeds from my business to fund my retirement, then where is my retirement planning, my retirement portfolio right now? If I can get what I want from my business, does that fill the gap of what I need to service the lifestyle that I want after the sale of my business? Basically, like, are you going to get enough out of your business to service your needs after the sale?
Yes.
And it's really important to know that well before you are ready to sell, because if it's not, if your business is not actually worth what you need personally, then you still have time to rebuild your business so that it can sell for the proceeds that you need. And I think a lot of people that just go directly to a broker, they may not have all of these answers. And then they find out after the sale of their business, when they go see their financial planner and they realize, oh my gosh, I didn't get after taxes, I didn't get what I needed.
Yeah.
For what comes next. You know, this is what I want to do. That must be
really sad, right? Or really scary for somebody.
It's really scary. Like if this was funding your retirement and then after you sell your business, you realize you don't have enough for what you need, there's no going back. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So that would be my second piece, is before you even start to sell your business, you got to know where you sit personally.
Yep.
And my third piece would be, you know, be aware of all of the exit options. So going to sell with a broker or selling to someone that you know, that's only one option. It's amazing to see the exit options that are coming out of the woodwork now. Social acquisition is starting to be a real thing. Nonprofits are buying businesses.
That's interesting.
It's so interesting. So the University of Waterloo has a project on the go right now called the Legacy Leadership Lab. And it's an 18-month project, and they're bringing people from across the country together to discuss social acquisitions. And so a social acquisition
is like a bunch of people who don't necessarily know each other go in together to buy a business. Is that right?
No, a social acquisition, not necessarily. It can be. Okay. So it depends on the structure for the investment pool. Mm-hmm. So a social acquisition is like a social body. It could be an individual who wants to buy a business and convert it to a social enterprise.
Right.
And
I see what you're saying. Yes.
Yeah. Or it could be, a social, you know, a nonprofit is a social enterprise essentially. So yes. Nonprofits are starting to buy businesses. Municipalities are starting to buy businesses. And so the University of Waterloo is looking at combining these case studies and bringing people together across the country who are working on these initiatives. And it's been a fascinating project to be a part of.
Mm-hmm.
Co-ops, investment co-ops, small communities that are pooling, you know, high net worth individuals who are members of those communities coming together to form a community co-op to go on an investment within their mm-hmm. community. It's amazing to see some of these alternative acquisition parties who are
really
forming.
Neat, isn't it?
It is so fascinating.
It sits way outside of what you traditionally would think, right? Like, yeah. And I think I think it might be better this way, right? You always, because back when I did my master's, it was 2008. And we would always talk about not-for-profit running like a business. Well, this here is exactly what that is, right? Because instead of relying on donations, you can now go outside and you can now make your own fortunes. It's easier to forecast your cash flows. It's easier to forecast the service provisions that you provide, right? So it makes a lot of sense. So that's super cool. So for our listeners, one more time, really quickly, those three points in order.
Good question. know what you're going to do after the sale of your business. Have a personal plan. Number two is know financially where you stand today while you are running your company, so that if there's a value gap, you can do something about it. You have the time and the capacity to do something about it and build more value in your company to get more return when you sell. And number three is be aware of all of the exit options that are available to you. Who are all of the parties who are buying businesses, and how can you actually sell to employees or management inside of your company? And just be aware of all of the options. So, the landscape of buying and selling businesses is evolving, and innovation and technology is coming into this space. And I think it was such an underground industry for so long, and it's coming above ground, and it's really exciting.
Yeah, no, that's amazing stuff. All right, team, look, we're going to wrap it up here soon. Elizabeth, two questions. First of all, you got 1 minute. Final thoughts, and if people wanted to get in contact with you, discuss exit planning, how would they do that?
Email or LinkedIn is the best way, elizabeth@commercialventures.com, or I can be found on LinkedIn. I love connecting with people, always happy to have a quick chat. And I'm going to be we're doing 3 free information sessions over the summer for introduction to exit planning. And then we have a 4-month course starting in September, and there's only 10 spots available. And basically at the end of the course, you'll have a written exit plan that'll give you some direction on how to go forward with your company.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, if I can throw that in there.
Sure, of course.
Throw in a little
of course.
And thank you.
No, that's great. Look, it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Final thoughts.
I love what you're doing. Keep going. I think so many people love these podcasts, and you're bringing to light exposing more people to it. So thank you for that. Thank you for having me on. I really appreciate it. And I'm available for people that are looking to buy and want to have that conversation as well. I guess that would be my last point, is we are speaking with buyers every Tuesday at 1:30 Mountain Time. We speak with buyers on a group call. So if that's something that people are interested, they can also reach out to me on that. And our new company is called Village Wealth.
Awesome. That sounds amazing. Okay, team, we're going to wrap it up there. Thank you to Elizabeth for joining me on the show today. My name is James. I'm your host and boring guy that asks questions, but it seems to work somehow. Don't forget, if you love this podcast, please, the number one thing you can do to help us out here is rate and review the show, because when you do that, it gets out to more business owners who need to hear this information, right? Imagine the amount of information you can pick up from one episode, five episodes. You have 15 direct points to improve your business that are practical, actionable, and simple. So thanks, folks, from the bottom of my heart. I appreciate each and every one of you. Same time, same place, it's next week, and I'll catch you there. Don't forget, if you love this podcast, please leave a review. One of my goals is to support as many entrepreneurs and small business owners as possible with these simple, actionable, and practical tips. My team and I spend countless hours finding great guests who are experts in their field, and these people 100% volunteer to be on this show. And one of the best ways to help other people find this podcast is with your review. So if you would be so kind and subscribe and leave a review, this show can get out to more people, and I would be forever grateful. So thank you in advance. Okay, guys, thanks so much once more for tuning in. See you next week, and have a great few days.